The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. A new CBS News poll puts immigration at the top of the list of Americans' concerns right now. And President Trump says those who aren't supposed to be in the United States, especially criminals, should get ready to go.
They're rough and they're tough, but they're not tough like our people. So we're getting them out.
American-backed Iraqi troops gained ground against ISIS in Mosul. And brave new worlds? Some scientists say this may be our best shot yet at finding out we Earthlings aren't alone in the vastness of space.
NASA has hit the jackpot this time.
I'm Sam Litzinger at CBS News in Washington. Millions of people in the United States illegally could face deportation, including those simply arrested for traffic violations. The Trump administration has announced a sweeping revision of enforcement policies. CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy says it's the latest effort by President Trump to follow through on promises he'd made during the campaign to strictly enforce immigration laws.
They're rough and they're tough. But
meeting with the CEOs of America's top manufacturing companies, President Trump described his administration's efforts to ramp up deportations of those he called really bad dudes.
It's a military operation because what has been allowed to come into our country. When you see gang violence that you've read about like never before and all of the things, much of that is people that are here illegally.
Advocates worry new guidelines issued this week would trigger the deportation of any illegal immigrant who commits even the most minor offense. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
CBS News correspondent Major Garrett says President Trump has a new national security advisor. Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster is largely winning praise as a warrior and a scholar.
McMaster, 54, is known within the Army as one of the best battlefield commanders in Iraq. But the job of National Security Advisor is quite a bit different. It requires coordinating the competing agendas of the Departments of State, Pentagon, Homeland Security, and the intelligence community. Lots and lots of politics. Even so, the president said his new team is ready.
Our country is lucky to have two people like this.
Flanked by his acting National Security Advisor Keith Kellogg, President Trump announced his new National Security Advisor would be the man to his right, Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster.
He's a man of tremendous talent and tremendous experience. I watched and read a lot over the last 2 days. He is highly respected by everybody in the military.
McMaster served in the first Gulf War, Afghanistan, and Iraq. He will be the fourth general appointed to a senior position in the Trump administration, after Defense Secretary James Mattis, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, and ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn.
Mr. President, thank you very much. I'd just like to say what a privilege it is to be able to continue serving our nation. I'm grateful to you for that opportunity, and I look forward to joining the national security team and doing everything I can to advance and protect the interests of the American people.
McMaster holds a Ph.D. in military history and gained wide recognition for his 1997 book, Dereliction of Duty, which criticized President Lyndon Johnson's strategy in Vietnam. McMaster would later take issue with President George W. Bush's counterinsurgency strategy in Iraq.
The enemy showed the people who they really are.
It was there in 2006 that 60 Minutes caught up with then-Colonel McMaster, working with Iraqi forces to retake the town of Tal Afar after it had been captured by al-Qaeda.
These are mass murderers. These are people who don't respect human life.
McMaster was not President Trump's first choice to replace Flynn. The president offered the job to retired Vice Admiral Robert Harward, who turned it down in a dispute over how much authority he would have over hiring senior National Security Council staff. The White House now says that McMaster will have full authority to hire whomever he wants on the National Security Council staff. It's worth pointing out that McMaster, unlike other generals in the Trump inner circle, is still active duty and therefore was duty-bound to accept the president's request or risk future career advancement.
LGBT advocates are denouncing, while conservatives are praising, the Trump administration's decision to lift Obama-era federal guidelines for transgender students. Those had allowed students to use school bathrooms and locker rooms corresponding to their gender identities. It'll now be up to states and school districts to decide the issue of bathroom access. Iraqi forces backed by the U.S.-led international coalition have been blasting through ISIS positions in Mosul, part of an offensive to retake the region. CBS News correspondent David Martin's close to the front lines.
We just came from an airbase whose location I'm not allowed to say, but it is one of the airbases ringing Iraq and Syria. One of the commanders there told us that right now in northern Iraq and eastern Syria, one bomb is falling every 8 minutes. Now, that's not shock and awe, but it is a steady rain of bombs coming down on ISIS.
ISIS militants have been fighting back with suicide attacks, snipers, even explosives dropped from drones. Now, this story was my personal favorite this week. It has the potential to become my personal favorite of all time. For the first time, astronomers have found seven Earth-sized planets orbiting a relatively nearby star, 40 light-years away. The planets are just at the right distance from their star so that they may have water. And where there's water, there may well be, well, you know. CBS News contributor, physicist Dr. Michio Kaku, talked about this with our colleagues at CBS this morning.
NASA has hit the jackpot this time. Okay, the Holy Grail is to find an Earth-like twin in outer space. We have now taken a giant step toward that, to find another planet in outer space, perhaps with oxygen, perhaps with liquid oceans, perhaps with radio transmissions, perhaps some life form.
Not just one.
That's right.
We have seven possible candidates.
Yeah. This is unprecedented. Astronomers are just jumping up and down right now.
How did they actually find these?
Well, it's very difficult because these planets cannot be seen directly. However, when they go in front of the mother star, it dims the light from the mother star, and that's how we do it. We look for periodic dimming of stars, and that is the characteristic of a planet moving in front of the star.
Mm-hmm. You said twin, and I said triplets, because three of them are actually in what's called the habitable zone. Explain what that means and what it may mean in terms of if there's life out there.
That's right. This is called the Goldilocks zone. If a planet is too close to the sun, then the oceans boil away. Yeah. If a planet is too far from the sun, the oceans freeze. Mm-hmm. You have to be just right from the sun to have liquid water, which is the universal solvent. It's where DNA first gets off the ground.
So what's the next step here for scientists?
The next step is we want to look at the atmospheres of these planets. We want to look for oxygen, water vapor. We want to look maybe even for radio transmissions. Perhaps there's intelligent life there. Perhaps they've harnessed some kind of radio. So this means that we're now hot on the heels of our best shot at finding a twin in outer space.
Will we know next week?
No, it'll take lots of months and months of very painful work, because an announcement that we have found evidence of life is huge.
Huge. Yeah.
Much bigger than, like, Columbus discovering the new
bigger
world.
Than Columbus. 235 trillion miles sounds
hop,
very,
skip,
very
and
far.
A jump. Come on.
Is it?
Yeah, it would take a few...
In astronomical terms.
Yeah, it would take a few 100,000 years for a Saturn rocket to reach that distance. Don't hold your breath.
All right.
All right. Professor Kaku, thanks very much.
President Trump's travels. You're paying for them, and the bills are adding up. That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Candidate Donald Trump frequently mocked President Obama for taking time away from the White House and for playing golf. President Trump, though, is taking time away from the White House and playing golf. CBS News correspondent Manuel Bajorca says Mr. Trump has been flying to his Florida estate quite a bit. And guess who pays for that?
Between the Secret Service and local deputies guarding the estate and the U.S. Coast Guard out in the surrounding waters, Mar-a-Lago is a fortress when the president is here.
Air Force One accounts for a big chunk of the presidential travel budget, costing more than $180,000 per hour to operate. That means the roughly four-hour round-trip flight to his seaside estate costs more than $700,000.
If he's going down there every weekend, the costs are going to add up pretty quickly.
Tom Fitton, president of the watchdog group Judicial Watch, is pressing the administration to release Mr. Trump's travel costs.
He doesn't need to go to Florida every weekend. He can work at the White House or up at Camp David.
Mr. Trump often attacked his predecessor for traveling too often. He once tweeted, "President Barack Obama's vacation is costing taxpayers millions of dollars. Unbelievable." 4 years ago, President Obama's weekend in South Florida cost taxpayers $3.6 million. The Pentagon spent about $2.8 million for Air Force One, plus support aircraft and military personnel. The Secret Service and the Coast Guard added nearly $800,000. During his 8 years in office, Mr. Obama racked up about $97 million in travel costs. President Trump is on pace to eclipse that by the end of his first year. Another cost of keeping President Trump safe, disruptions to businesses near Mar-a-Lago. The airspace around Lantana Airport is restricted whenever the president is in town. On an average day, there are around 300 takeoffs and landings.
But when the president is here, nothing's moving, except the bottom line for businesses that operate out of this airport. They say they lose about $30,000 each weekend they're closed.
Others welcome the presidential visits to Palm Beach. Ed Kazatley owns a boutique in the ritzy Worth Avenue shopping district.
President Trump will bring many more high-end visitors to the community, which is going to definitely help everyone on a high economic scale.
Regardless of who is in office, presidential visits are never cheap. Clearly, the president must be kept safe, but he also travels with a contingent of aides needed to run the government, especially during emergencies.
You might call this an unintended consequence of President Trump's effort to restrict travel and immigration for some people who want to come to the United States. CBS News correspondent Tony DeCoppel tells us it's leading to a shortage of doctors and of foreigners who want to become doctors and practice here in the U.S.
The United States is suffering a severe shortage of primary care physicians, with gaps reported in virtually every state. Major healthcare system had hoped to fill some of those gaps with foreign-born doctors. But with new talk of a travel ban, they now fear that those efforts could fail.
I started getting one text and one email after another, after another, after another, after another.
The moment President Trump signed his temporary travel ban, Dr. Jerry Cruz, dean of the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine, was slammed by messages from panicked colleagues.
It's an atmosphere of what's going to happen next. I think there is some fear. There's fear of detention. There's fear of the ban being extended to other countries.
One in four doctors in the U.S. are foreign-born, including an estimated 15,000 from the seven countries already included in President Trump's travel ban.
How significant is a shortage at a place like this?
Well, in this county, the shortage of primary care physicians is about half of what's needed.
Dr. Cruz had hoped to help rural and shorthanded places like Morgan County, about 30 miles outside Springfield, Illinois, by recruiting more international graduates.
International medical graduates are a very important part of the American health system.
Dr. Andrew Gurman is president of the American Medical Association.
In many places, the international medical graduate physician is the medical system. So people should be very concerned about this.
All your dreams are shattered just by an issue of, you know, a piece of paper saying that you can enter the country.
Imad Uddin Hakimi, a Syrian-born cardiology fellow at Chicago's Cook County Hospital, arrived as a resident in 2011.
If someone in the White House happens to be watching this, what would you want them to know about the doctors from these seven countries?
I would really urge them not to take this opportunity away from them. If the program wants them and they want the program, they should have the same opportunity to match here.
What message would you have for foreign applicants who are watching this play out in the United States and thinking about next year?
I tell them, just hang on. We're there for you.
Now, the average doctor sees between 800 and 1,500 patients a year. So when we're talking about the 15,000 physicians from the seven countries already affected by President Trump's travel ban, we're talking about health care that could affect millions of Americans.
So Donald Trump has been president for just over a month. How's he doing? Yes, that is a loaded question. And how you answer it depends a lot on what you thought of him before the election. CBS News has been talking with some voters to find out how happy or how disappointed they are with the new leader of the free world.
My name is Hallie Mitchens-Cook.
My name is Leo Smith.
My name is Cesar Vargas.
My name is Stephen Shook. I'm from Carmel, California. I'm starting up my own business, and I voted for Donald Trump. Since Trump has taken office, I think he's really trying to make it easier for people like myself to start up their own businesses.
We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort.
If you did vote for Trump, I'm having a hard time seeing how you would still remain supportive of him.
That I'm proud to be an American.
He's kind of reneging on his promises from the campaign. Obamacare still hasn't been repealed, still hasn't been replaced. The wall. The job I'm in, being a special educator, you have to remain optimistic every day. I wake up every morning scared to turn the news on, just because of what I might see.
And I've taken decisive action to keep radical Islamic terrorists the hell out of our country.
I do feel optimistic. This is a free country, and we do need to respect the laws when it comes to immigration.
We are a nation of laws, but we're also a nation of just laws. We're creating this modern underground railroad where people have to hide from the government.
I think he's addressing the issue of immigration. He may have done it in a blunt force way, but the things that needed to be done are being done.
The whole Russian thing, that's a ruse.
The Russian influences and all the news surrounding it, they're claiming it's fake news. And he's very upset that these leaks happened. He wasn't upset when he was using WikiLeaks to smear Hillary Clinton.
I'm not looking for a rhetorical genius. I'm looking for a guy who will fix the problems of America.
We'll keep checking back with these voters over the next several months to get a sense of what they like and what they don't like about the presidency of Donald J. Trump. He says no presidential administration has gotten off to as fast a start as his. But his critics say things are moving too fast and in the wrong direction. Stay tuned. The next few months will be historic. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
It's the new year, which means a fresh start for your business. And a great year starts with making great hires. But posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your jobs on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter, you can jumpstart your hiring in 2017. Post your jobs to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. For millions of Americans, getting insulin is literally a matter of life or death. Now, CBS News correspondent Anna Werner says some of those people are finding it's nearly impossible for them to pay for the insulin. And there are allegations one reason is that the drug companies that make it have decided, as a group, to raise prices.
Investment research firm SSR Health analyzed insulin list prices from 2012 to 2016 for the three companies that manufacture it and found prices went up between 99 and 120%.
Companies do it because they can.
In a separate analysis, SSR's Richard Evans also found a striking pattern. The prices of two prime insulin drugs rose in lockstep, mirroring each other 12 times between 2008 and 2014.
The two companies took price increases within days of one another, and the price increases were similar, even identical, down to the percentage point.
If you raise your price and I raise my price to the same level, what am I saying to you as a company?
Let's keep going, or I'm not going to fight you.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is calling for a federal investigation, alleging collusion among the three drug companies, Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and Sanofi.
Just coincidentally, it happens that the three major suppliers of insulin seem to be raising their prices at the same exact time, at the same level. So I think you have to be very naive not to believe that there is collusion.
The companies deny they've broken any laws. Sanofi told us there's strong competition on price. Eli Lilly said it's aggressively competing on net or negotiated price. And Novo Nordisk's president said on the company's website that increasing list prices is designed to offset rebates and price concessions to maintain profitability. And Lori Riley with the trade group that represents U.S. pharmaceutical manufacturers told us,
well, I don't believe there's been collusion by our companies.
She points out, although the drug company's list prices are up, the negotiated prices for insulin, what the industry calls net prices, have gone up just 2 to 3% overall. She says that's because intermediaries called pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, negotiate for rebates from drug companies, take a fee, then pass those lower net prices on to insurance companies and ultimately consumers. The problem, says Evans, is patients who have high deductibles or little or no insurance don't get those discounted prices.
So in other words, the people who can least afford these increases are the ones who get hit by them.
Everybody gets hit by them a little bit, but people that can't afford to get hit disproportionately.
But Riley says,
when you look at the evidence, the competitive marketplace is working, and it's working very aggressively to help keep drug cost increases in check.
I'm listening to that statement, and I'm hearing consumers go, are you kidding me?
There is an issue for many patients who today face increasing deductibles. If those patients are coming to the pharmacy counter and they're paying full list price, while their insurance company or pharmacy benefit manager has bought that drug at a 50 or 60% discount, that is a problem.
The country's largest pharmacy benefit manager told us drug makers are the ones raising the prices. But experts tell us that there's plenty of blame to go around here in the system. Meanwhile, all three insulin manufacturers say they've announced new initiatives to make insulin more affordable for patients who need that help.
I'm spoiled when it comes to buying things online. If it doesn't come with free shipping, I don't buy it. Now Amazon is making it easier to qualify for free shipping. Our colleagues at CBS This Morning found out why. It has to do with old-fashioned capitalist competition.
Amazon is making it easier to get free shipping for online orders. The retailer lowered its free shipping minimum from $49 to $35 for non-Prime members. More than 50 million items qualify. The move comes less than a month after Walmart started offering free two-day shipping for all customers on eligible orders of at least $35. More than 2 million Walmart items are included. CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson joins us now. Free shipping for Amazon, $35 and up. What's part of the strategy?
This strategy is very clear. Brick and mortar against online, they're going tit for tat. We have to expect it. Amazon has historically been focused on its Prime customers, those people who pay a subscription rate, $99 a year. They get free shipping as well as a lot of other freebies. They have ignored this customer, one would say, that doesn't want to subscribe, and that customer Walmart is going after. And so once Walmart lowered the bar, Amazon had to do the exact same thing.
Unless you're a geologist, or more specifically a petrologist, yes, I had to look it up, you probably take rocks for granted. They're just there. But CBS News correspondent Dana Jacobson tells us about an effort to get more attention for rocks by painting them. And, as it happens, by helping someone have a better day.
At the University of Mount Union, painted rocks are hidden in plain sight, on a bench, beside a tree, and atop the popular Kissing Bridge.
People's days are truly brightened by these rocks.
Nancy Powell Pearson, who lives nearby, launched Northeast Ohio Rocks with a Facebook page last summer after hearing about similar groups in Washington State. That's where the rock-hiding trend started, with a simple premise. Find a rock, paint a rock, hide a rock, and oh yes, post pictures.
Is it just that idea that maybe you brought a smile? Because people will write a post and
Absolutely.
Maybe they smiled when they saw it.
Absolutely. There are so many people that write posts and say, you know, I found this rock and it really did make me smile.
Since launching Northeast Ohio Rocks 7 months ago, more than 50,000 have joined, making this the largest find and post rock group in the country.
Do you ever get the pushback of, are you kidding me? You're painting rocks?
Absolutely. That's what everybody thinks. The naysayers become believers. It's just an incredible thing. We see it happen all the time.
But determining what's meaningful, simple as it may seem, can get complicated. The list of rules is extensive.
You also make an effort, though, to not be political, to not take stands. Why is that?
That's a tough one, because I take a lot of criticism for that. We're not here to support issues. We're not here to support candidates. We're not here to support causes. We're here to promote kindness and sharing with each other.
What is encouraged? Rocks with a personal meaning, whether creating a work of art or something straight from the heart.
I came home from work that day and I said, what are these? And there's a bucket full of rocks. I mean, there has to be at least 200, all different sizes.
Lisa Fury went to high school with Nancy and Brenda Kale, who helps run the group. Together, they painted a bucket full of rocks to honor Lisa's daughter, Megan.
Her favorite color was purple, so they are purple with green hearts.
Megan fought nerve sheath sarcoma, a rare form of cancer, for 6 months. She died in August, before anyone predicted.
They told us she could live for years, and then it was 3 weeks.
Nothing will cure the grief of losing a child. But Megan's rocks, as they're now known, have brought much-needed support.
When somebody finds one of Megan's rocks, the kindness in the person that Megan was is being shared by all these people that find her rocks.
Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Sam Litzinger on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Food labels can be confusing things to read. What do words like all natural actually mean, anyway? Well, sometimes they seem to mean whatever the manufacturer wants them to mean. Our colleagues at CBS This Morning talked with one food company executive who thinks it's time to make the labels make more sense and have outside experts make sure that happens.
The Kind Healthy Snacks Company is taking on special interests in the food industry. This follows a clash with the FDA in 2015. Kind was told it could not call its fruit and nut bars healthy because of the amount of fat. But the agency later reversed course.
And now Kind CEO is committing $25 million over 10 years to create an organization. It's calling it Feed the Truth. Its goal is to promote public health over special interest. It wants to stop, quote, bias science funded by food groups from influencing nutrition policy. Daniel Lubetsky is CEO of Kind Healthy Snacks. Deb Eschmeyer was a White House senior advisor for nutrition policy under President Obama, and they both join us at the table. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Daniel, putting in $25 million of your own money says to me you are very serious about this. This is not just a photo op for you. What do you want to accomplish?
For over two decades, not just related to what you just described, I've been very concerned that I notice that sometimes the zealousness of our community gets a little bit beyond what it should be, and people stop thinking long-term about the community's interest and more about short-term interests. And I felt that we needed to balance the level, the playing field, to allow scientists and nutritionists and doctors to be the ones that really help us inform public policy. It came back to bite us. It was one example. This last fall, we learned that the sugar industry 60 years ago had paid Harvard scientists to try to deflect attention from sugar and point the finger at fat. And it's not just sugar. It's every special interest sometimes gets a little bit overzealous and doesn't think about what is really in the best interest of people. And we want to...
But didn't it throw you... At first, they said you can't call your company, your snacks, healthy, and then they reversed that. Didn't that sort of spur something in you that said, wait a minute, let's take a deeper dive on this?
Yes, and when I learned about what that regulation meant, I was like, at the beginning, how could it be that under the current regulation, you know, you can have a steak of salmon or a bunch of raw almonds or olives or half an avocado, and that cannot be termed healthy. But you can have sugary children's cereal enriched with vitamins or something whose number one ingredient is sugar, and it can be called healthy.
Yeah.
And that didn't make sense to me. And so when we filed the citizens' petition, it was really going beyond the issue of... We didn't really use the term that much on our wrappers, and it was on the back end. We didn't re-add it. It was more about, like, public policy. And they was telling me that...
The last time that the definition of healthy was redefined by the Food and Drug Administration was 1993.
No.
So it's up for a redefinition.
Maybe you've noticed that more and more companies are talking up their charity work. CBS News correspondent Jill Wagner says, aside from the fact that helping charities is a good thing to do, some firms are finding it's also good for their bottom lines.
Bombas is a sock company with a soul.
We found out that socks were the number one most requested clothing item in homeless shelters. So for every pair of socks we sell, we donate a pair to the community.
CEO David Heath launched Bombas in 2013. They hold events like this one, where they make breakfast for the homeless and give socks to people who need them.
It's nice that, you know, they can hand them out, they can give it to us, because we can't always just get to a washer.
The goal was to give away 1 million pairs of socks in 10 years. It took less than three. In the past few years, a growing number of companies have realized that doing good is good business.
Being charitable is cool now.
We started with Heron Pants.
Nathan Coleman is the CEO of Elephant Pants, a clothing company that donates 10% of profits to charities that help save elephants. He says they make up that money by charging a bit more than competitors, and he admits the charity aspect creates buzz for the brand and goodwill with customers.
We definitely get a strong return on investment because we get very loyal, passionate customers that keep coming back.
Business is on a mission to make money.
This is, it's a wonderful thing.
And a difference. Jill Wagner, CBS News, New York.
I bet you can sing, or at least hum if you can't sing, the theme song to your favorite movie or TV show. I'd whistle the Andy Griffith Show theme song for you, but I know you're busy. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy talked with composer Raman Djawadi, whose job is to capture a mood in music and make you remember it.
He composed the epic theme song for Game of Thrones. And the far more subdued start to each episode of HBO's new hit show, Westworld.
That kind of dark, ominous tone to it.
Yeah, so I think a main title always has to summarize the overall mood of the show.
At what point did you know you had real musical talent?
Well, according to my parents, they said when I was 4 years old, I walked up to the piano and just started playing melodies by memory. So they looked at each other and said, we think we should give this boy some lessons.
Wow. So you really had a knack for playing by ear, not having to read the sheet music.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's something picking up music by ear and reproducing it was always something that felt natural to me.
As a teenager, he saw the film The Magnificent Seven, and something clicked when he heard the score.
When I turned the film off, that music still stuck in my head, and that had such an impact on me. That's when I realized, you know, this is something I want to do when I grow up, and I want to write music like that.
And that's exactly what he's done, providing the rock and roll influence score for Iron Man. And the musical Clash for Clash of the Titans.
What is it about scoring film and TV that interests you?
I love how much you can affect a picture with music, the dramatic underscore you can influence an audience and a viewer with music.
His compositions now average more than 1.8 million plays each month on Spotify. That success is why Djawadi is about to embark on his own road show, taking the Game of Thrones music on tour, playing arenas across the country with a live orchestra.
Do you feel like you're making orchestral music more accessible to people that may not consume that at, say, Symphony Hall?
Absolutely, and that's why it's actually very exciting that we're able to do this, because I feel like it's a crossover now. It's people that might enjoy a classical concert will come to this, but also people that might not necessarily go to a symphony orchestra will enjoy coming to this and just hearing their favorite themes. Just excited actually that I'm able to go out myself. I actually carved out my schedule for this so that I could really be close with the audience and with the fans and just see the reaction of how they feel when this music is performed.
We hope you remember this music. It's ours. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Check out CBS Radio News podcasts. From hard news to features, there's lots available from our app. Listen to experts like John Dickerson each Sunday on Face the Nation or Scott Pelley every weeknight on the CBS Evening News. There's the World News Roundup, America's longest-running network newscast, and the Weekend Roundup, our weekend review magazine show. It's all available from CBSRadioNews.com or on our app for iOS and Android.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger.
The Academy Awards are coming up. The ceremony is a chance for Hollywood to honor its best, or at least what the judges think is the best. One film that's pretty much drawing universal acclaim is the musical La La Land. Yes, a musical. Is that
so? Or it could be less than nothing.
Good to know, so you agree.
That's right. What a
CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason talked with the film's director.
Hollywood is singing the praises of Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling in the hit movie La La Land. The film has received 14 Oscar nominations, a tie for the most ever. One of those nominations is for Damien Chazelle as Best Director. La La Land is the 32-year-old's second commercial feature. He describes the box office smash as a movie he had to make.
I'd been a movie fan my whole life and a musician a lot in my life, but ironically, musicals themselves, I was one of the people who got a little uncomfortable when people break into song.
That all changed, of course, for the young director of the musical smash La La Land, after he saw the daring dance sequences in films like An American in Paris and Singin' in the Rain.
I think there's something very outlandish about them in a really wonderful, freeing, liberating way that you don't see as much of in Hollywood anymore. We're a little more literal now.
La La Land is a modern romance between a jazz musician played by Ryan Gosling and an actress played by Emma Stone. Chazelle calls it a love letter to the kind of dreams society often mocks.
You didn't want the dance numbers to be sort of technically perfect.
No, I wanted them to be human. There has to be a certain kind of humbleness, or humility, I mean, but also a certain kind of grandeur to it as well, because love makes everything grand.
When did you know you wanted to make movies?
I've never wanted to do anything else. I can't remember ever wanting to do anything else.
When Chazelle was 10, his father was his first cameraman.
But then I would be very unhappy with the footage that came back because the camera was never pointed the way it should be, or, you know, he would improvise, and that was verboten. So I had to eventually take matters in my own hands. So I knew, okay, I have to learn how to use this camera myself. And so I did that, and then from then on, that was my camera.
At Harvard, where he studied film, Chazelle's senior thesis was a musical called Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench.
When I kissed the boy in the park.
It would be the dress rehearsal for La La Land, which he started writing in 2010.
When you first took La La Land to people out in Hollywood, what did they say?
Interest was nowhere to be found, to be frank, for quite a while.
So Chazelle wrote a screenplay based on his years studying to be a jazz drummer. The film, Whiplash, which he also directed, would win 3 Oscars.
5, 6, 7. Not quite my tempo. It's all good.
And suddenly, Hollywood was interested in La La Land.
Yeah, I took Whiplash to open the door.
That's a pretty big risk for you on your second film, to want to make a musical.
Yes. You're not wrong.
A lot of people would have chosen something safer.
I had never really thought there was a choice. You know, La La Land was this dream project that I was desperate to make for years before Whiplash.
The film's opening dance number is also its most ambitious. They shut down a highway on-ramp in L.A. for 2 days to shoot the scene that involved 100 dancers.
How many takes did it take you to make that work?
Somewhere between 20 to 30 takes for each piece of the number.
Musicals either work or they don't. There's not a lot of middle ground.
Yeah, there's nothing quite as bad as a bad musical.
I got a call back.
What? Come on. For what?
For a TV show.
So Chazelle approached the premiere last year in terror.
Because it was so personal, and also I think because most of my memory with this movie was hearing the word no. That won't work. No one wants to see that.
City of stars, are you shining just for me?
But they have. La La Land has earned more than $300 million at the box office and tied a record for Oscar nods.
14 Academy Award nominations.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. it's a little surreal.
Would you make another musical?
Absolutely. Just not anytime soon. Not anytime in the next, you know, couple years.
If the Academy Awards are here, that means spring is right around the corner. Well, at least that's what many of us are telling ourselves anyway. CBS News correspondent Vicky Barker says there's new evidence that winter isn't just hard on us humans. It's hard on our cars, too.
Americans spend $3 billion a year repairing damage caused by de-icing agents.
We found that, on average, it's about $500 per event.
The AAA's John Nielsen says the new liquid compounds penetrate deeper into car undersides than rock salt, causing rust and corrosion.
Corrosion itself can start to affect things like brake lines and exhaust systems and even fuel lines.
If the brakes feel squishy or you smell fumes or if any warning lights come on while you're driving in the winter, he says, pull over and call that tow truck. Vicky Barker, CBS News.
AAA says if you live in a winter wonderland, it's a good idea to drive your car through a car wash once a week to get rid of all the grime. Make sure it's a wash that sprays under your vehicle where the road salt and the chemicals can do the most damage. Or we could just all move to Hawaii. I think about that every February. CBS News correspondent Danielle Nottingham has found a warm place. She's visited a facility that seems to be part of a trend where people like to sweat and lose weight.
Ryan Weiss is getting quite a workout without moving a muscle.
Is that comfortable enough for you?
That's great.
LA's Shape House puts a twist on the ancient practice of sweat lodges. Instead of tents heated by fire or stones.
Are you all set?
Yes.
An attendant tucks you into a 160-degree blanket.
I notice that I'm just, like, generally less irritable, less stressed. And then there's, like, the weight loss aspect of it, too.
The luxury detox is gaining popularity with its promises of glowing skin and burning calories.
It has that effect of, like, you know, general wellness.
Heather Catania hits this urban sweat lodge once a week.
You can lay down and burn 1,000 calories while watching all of your favorite shows on Netflix.
She's already dropped 10 pounds and says her skin is soft and clear. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles. Pasta.
Pasta. It's always fascinating to see how far people will go to avoid what many experts say we really should be doing to lose weight, eat less, and exercise more. We appreciate your listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. I'm Sam Litzinger, CBS News.